Welcome to the Trades Podcast, a podcast about the business of home improvement and promoting the trades to young adults.
Well, that's one of the things that, you know, a lot of people I don't think understand about construction is, you know, once you start to learn something and you become valuable and you become, you know, you show up, you're not strung out on drugs, you're not drunk, you're not whatever, you know, you can actually talk back to your boss sometimes, you know, like if you have a disagreement about something, you know, and they're not going to fire you. They're going, he shows up, he does his work, you know, yeah, we've got our differences, but you know, you become kind of like brothers, you know, like where you kind of argue about things. Yeah. Sometimes, you know,
and sometimes it's an argument. Sometimes it's, hey, boss, that's not the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
well, let me do it this way.
It's a lot different. You know, like when you work in retail or you work anywhere else, you know, it's like everybody's, you know, they're kind of like, oh, I can't talk like that to my boss.
Yeah.
It's like in construction, it's like, yeah, he's happy to have me because I show up, I do the job, yeah. You know, it's like, it's very hard to find people that are willing to do their work and do it right. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And that's what we're trying to do here, you know, with the podcast, with the Trades Podcast, and through Jeff and I, we're always trying to promote, you know, the culture and what people should expect, you know, yeah. Just having some sort of soft skill to be able to communicate with not only just customers, but your, you know, your coworkers, your boss, like you said, you know, and that's where we love to hear it. You know, the employee stories where it's, you know, I started doing something and I taught them one way. I come back a few months later and they're doing something totally different, but it's more efficient. It saves me money, saves me time, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So there's always those cool things that you always hear, you know, like, you know, from the stories, but of course you don't want to piss them off, you know?
Yeah.
You don't want to piss anybody off.
I'll set this over here so that way I can talk to you guys while I can look at you. While
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, we're right here, Ignite BBB Podcast Studio, right here in partly sunny San Diego. But I'm Danny.
And I'm Jeff.
This is the Trades Podcast. Right here, we're sitting down with Chris. Chris, how you feeling?
Good.
Awesome. Happy Thursday.
Yeah. Good day.
Right here. It's a beautiful day. Ready to talk about your business, Bigfoot Shot Creek.
Yes.
Love it. Yeah. Bigfoot Shot Creek. Yeah. Go ahead. Introduce the business yourself into the Trades Podcast world.
Well, as they said, my name is Chris Obert and I have Bigfoot Shot Creek and concrete pumping. So basically I'm a concrete pumper, but I also can spray the concrete like swimming pools, or sometimes you'll see the side of hills, say in La Jolla, where, you know, there's a house above a set of cliffs. And they're worried about the house falling into the ocean. You might see where they're spraying concrete onto the side of that, or where they have sprayed concrete onto the side of that. And that's one of the things that I do. So, and I've done that for a little over 18 years. I've been the guy that actually sprays it. So, you know, I have a lot of experience in what I do. So,
yeah, we were talking about it earlier. That's where a nozzleman will kind of come into play, right?
Yes, that's my claim to fame. You know, I'm a nozzleman. I've been a nozzleman for 18 years. A lot of people don't understand even what a nozzleman is. It's the guy who sprays the concrete, but he's skilled. You know, and you eventually have to develop a skill that I would compared to being a journeyman welder, you know, because there's different situations that you're in and there's different things that you have to deal with that would compare it to welding, you know, because, you know, you're making it structurally solid. You're making sure that everything's correct. You know, some jobs aren't as bad as others, but there's certain jobs, you know, where it's very important and it's not, you know, not as easy as you would think. You know, it's a physical job. You know, it keeps you in shape. That's the one thing, you know, now that I've went off on my own, I'm not as busy. And, you know, it's very hard for me to get into the habit of exercising when I'm busy with everything else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it does keep you in shape. You know, it is hard, dirty physical work. But that's one of the things that kind of come along with it, which makes it even harder to do the job correctly, you know, on certain jobs, you know, like I said, you know, you're kind of like a journeyman welder, and you, there's certain things you have to do, but then you've got the physical endurance coming with it. So, you know, it makes it harder for you, you know, to do what it is that needs to be done sometimes because of the physical work, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the nozzleman.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm also a concrete pumper. So you have to use a concrete pump to get the material, you know, out of the end of the hose so that the nozzleman can spray it. So, like, the pumper, he's more limber. He's more moving around more when he has to. And, you know, because, you know, when the concrete's there, you've got roughly 38 minutes to unload it before they start charging you $2.50, maybe $3 per minute.
And that's coming from the big truck?
Yeah, coming from the concrete truck. Big so concrete truck. You've got basically a time limit. It's like basically, you know, your boss is going to look at you, or that's me in my case. So I'm going to be going, oh, you know, we need to hurry up. We need to get this unloaded. You know, you might have a break in between trucks. Maybe the next truck's not there. So then you get a little break in there.
And I imagine, Chris, there's some coordination that you're using between the concrete truck operator that's dumping it, how fast, what the slump is, he's keeping up, and you're trying to, the guys that are actually prepping or moving the concrete around, that, you know, you're dumping it in the form boards.
No, with a nozzleman, his job is also to take care of those finishers.
Yeah.
His job is to make sure that those finishers don't have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, so you've got to, if you pump it too fast, then they're trying to move it out of the way.
Well, they basically kind of screed.
Yeah.
They kind of screed it. I have to get some videos of guys screeding and cutting and finishing. And.
Yeah, but if you're dumping it too fast, then they're trying to screed too much of the way.
No.
If you come up short, then they're trying to shovel it back to fill the pockets.
Like I said, I compare it a lot to welding.
Yeah.
You can see some guys, they can weld really fast. And I can spray concrete really fast. Depending on how dry the material is, I can lay it down. I can have a truck unloaded in 25 minutes. There's nine and a half yards in 25 minutes. And that's pretty comfortably. That's not turning the machine up all the way.
Wow, that's a lot of concrete going through the
nine and a half yards goes through that hose, and I can unload it in 25 minutes. And I can have that unloaded. And basically it takes time to back the truck up. Takes time to, you know, back up the next truck and, you know, switch trucks or whatnot if the next guy's there. But as a nozzleman, that's about where I can comfortably shoot at those speeds. You know, in most situations, you know.
Do you know what a ton of concrete weighs?
4,000 pounds. A ton is 2,000 pounds. But no, you're talking about a yard.
Yeah, so.
A yard of concrete is 4,000 pounds.
4,000 pounds, and you're putting nine and a half yards out there. So you're 35 to 40,000 pounds.
Just in
25 minutes, you're holding that pressure and the weight of that going through that big hose and nozzle that you're holding. Mm-hmm. Incredible. Yeah, that'll make you get in shape a little fast.
Yeah, no, you're carrying around this hose, and a lot of it is technique. You know, a lot of people look at me and they go, oh, it's because you're big. And it's like, it's totally not because I'm big, you know. People are asking, how do you hold that hose all day long, you know? And it's like, I've shot 21 trucks before, you know, and, you know, it was an insane day. I wasn't planning on it. It was just walking into a situation where, you know, I didn't know what was going on, and the guy just kept pushing me, and we wound up, I started at 8 o'clock one morning, and I got finished at 2 o'clock the next.
And wow.
Yeah, no, this was not for, you know, like I said, this was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like we mentioned, I mean, this is not for, you know, with a lot of trades industries, it's not for everybody.
This was not a normal day. This was, you know, it was
a blue moon once.
I've never experienced, you know, anybody who, you know, any normal company owner would not have done that job,
right.
You know, and had everybody there till 2 o'clock.
But luckily they had Chris there. That's the
they I got a call. They said, oh, I need a certified nozzleman and I need him now.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, oh, really? Okay. Well, it's like, okay, where's the job? You know, and it's 8 o'clock. Or I got there at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So,
well, you said it right there, a certified nozzleman.
Yes.
So there's a certificate process that helps you be able to man one, right?
It's not required everywhere, but I know up in LA and Orange County, they do require it. And, you know, like to shoot swimming pools. San Marcos actually requires you to be certified nozzleman to shoot swimming pools, which is good, which is a good thing, you know. In some ways, it's a good thing. I think it definitely needs improvement on how they're training people. But
sure.
Is that a state certification, like contractor's license, or where does that come
ACI.
From?
ACI, American Concrete Institute.
Okay.
So, you know, they have a lot of really good, like when you listen to some of their stuff, it's long and it's boring, but, you know, all their ideas are good. The way they do everything is correct.
Okay.
You know, sometimes you can definitely tell the difference between someone who's done it and someone who has not, you know, when you're hearing them talk. Mm-hmm. But
I think you're totally right about that, though. I mean, the part that, you know, some cities and counties are requiring it only makes it mean that it's going to help build certain, at least for the pools on that side of things, allow that pool to last a very long time.
Well, the biggest real issue with what I have with it is the people who are certified to watch you don't know anything. And what I do is such a small niche that nobody knows anything about it. And that's one of the things that, you know, I want to start creating content and I want to start creating mm-hmm. videos so that I can start showing you so that you can start seeing it from my, or other people can just look it up on YouTube or whatever and start seeing it from my point of view.
Yeah.
You know, and then even the guys doing the work, you know, cause you know, it's, like I said, it's a very small niche.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of information you can find. YouTube now is, you know, what's popular. It's not, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it brings credibility to you and your company. But you're also, I think, the more important thing is you're educating other people that are in the industry or involved in that particular craft.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, there's I think the industry could be much larger than what it is. I think that there's a lot of room for growth, but one of the biggest things is having one, the men to do the work if it does grow, and, you know, two, people just need to know about it because some people don't know that it's even a, you know, it's like, oh, I'm going to do a basement. I'm going to do block wall. Well, why don't you do a shotcrete wall instead of a block wall? You know, it's, you know, or a poured wall, you know, it's one of the things. You know, I'm sure there it would come down to business and everything. It would come down to, you know, what the pricing is and this and that. And,
sure.
But like even like comparing it to a formed poured wall, you know, the amount of work that it takes to form walls, you know, you have to have guys that know what they're doing. They have to do it right, you know, because when you get concrete there, you know, you could have a form blowout. Now the entire job has to get shut down. You might have another truck sitting there. What are you going to do with it? You know, you might spread it somewhere else, whatever. Well, what if there's another truck on the road? Now you got another $2,000 sitting on the road. Mm-hmm. That's your problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, formed walls require, you know, a lot more work than what we do. You know, it's you set up one side to the form and you spray right up against it. So it just, it's a lot less work. And say that you want the backside of it to be finished or whatnot. You could strip those forms the very same day and have somebody come and shoot the backside of it, or have them go around the wall and shoot the backside of it, and they can finish the backside of the wall.
Right.
So you could have both sides of the wall finished if you wanted them to be. Or it's going to come down to your, or you just set your wall nice and plumb. And, you know, it's going to take the shape of whatever's on that wall.
So you can shoot a wall. Mm-hmm. It's got the rebar in it for the structural holding it together, mm-hmm. so that the face of that is fairly, maybe not smooth, but straight.
Well, you can do different finishes, and like what I was saying about with the nozzleman, you know, it comes down to different techniques with each one of those finishes.
Okay.
You know, and it all these different finishes require different techniques and different things that you're going to do. So you could have a nice float finish on a wall, or you could do trowel finish. You know, it may cost you a little more to have it trowel finished because there's more labor involved. Float finish is not as much. It's easier to do a float finish. It's a little bit rougher. Or you have a rough finish, which is like with the swimming pools, they leave them rough. Like they just basically just finish it, shape everything and give it, you know, make sure that it's level, it's plumb, and everything's getting veneered. So the entire whole shell of a swimming pool gets covered in plaster. And then the surfaces, you know, the flat surfaces up on the top, you know, up on the deck, they're getting covered with flagstone or, you know, whatever.
Interesting.
You know? And then, you know, you may have tile. You know, anything that has tile, you know, it has to be plumb and straight, you know, and because, you know, you have to.
So a shot finished wall for like a basement on a house can actually, sounds like it could be done a little bit cheaper than doing a traditional framed wall.
I think if I in the future developed, you know, if I had enough work to just develop a crew for just shooting walls, I think I could make it very, very affordable. Especially like if I live, you know, if basements were more popular, like back east, you know, because I'm originally from Ohio.
Okay.
And, you know, back there, you know, everybody has a basement, you know, out here, it's not so popular. You know, you start seeing around Coronado Island, there's a lot of basements there. There's a huge basement. I shot for another, you know, with another company and stuff. I remember we were there for an entire week. They had a bowling alley. They have a swimming pool that's above the basement. This is basically their backyard. So from what I understand, they were covering the entire backyard was going to have 3 feet of dirt. And then they had their swimming pool. So the bowling alley, the movie theater, everything is down below, you know, below the ground. You don't know. You want, now that it's done, you probably don't even know it's there.
Yeah. The Coronado's, a lot of that's fill and it's sandy.
Oh, yeah.
So the earthquake doesn't have the seismic twisting and shaking that you're going to find in most of the rural San Diego area. We have earthquakes out here. That's why you don't see a lot of basements. They crack.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, so, like I said.
That's why they make the pools so thick, too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, that's one thing when you come out here, everyone puts rebar in. Your driveways and everything.
Yeah, it moves.
And, yeah. So, you know, that's like I said, you talk about the substrate or the ground or whatever it is that you're pouring on, you know, it changes things. So that obviously that changes the price and what you're able to afford to do.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, one thing you mentioned, I mean, we saw some videos on YouTube as well. You got your, I think, TikTok, YouTube, and I think you had one other Facebook, I think. Well, yeah. Where you have these videos, and you're talking about wanting to put out more content, and it seems that I think that we had spoke, or you spoke with Jeff about you're looking for a trainee. You're looking for some candidates to possibly, you know, come in and be a part of your team and everything. So how do you see your YouTube videos and messages, or what is your message through YouTube that can possibly help your trainee? Or a potential trainee.
Messages through YouTube?
Yeah, like your message of what are you, the videos that you're putting out, whether it's going to be more educational or just informational in the sense of, is it going to be for your clients or maybe for...
Well, there's going to be several different categories. I definitely want to do training videos because, like I said, with what I do, there's not a lot of information out there and no one trains. With what I do, you go out and that's your training, and you know as good as you get, or it's going to come down to who's training you. And if no one trains you, basically it just comes down to, you know, whoever you're working around and whatever their habits are. And a lot of these guys, they just, you know, hey, it's money, you know, it's a few hours, you know, but they don't, you know, they, like I said, they don't have the skill level that I'm looking for, so. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm going to definitely have training videos. Some of the training videos I plan on posting. I'm probably going to have some personal videos that I just show just my employees. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like one of the things I mentioned to, you know, a couple people is like, I'm going to take videos of me shooting, and I want to take videos of my guys shooting. And I want to have several, you know, guys, all these videos of them shooting and when I'm training them. You know, that way I can physically show them, like, hey, look here, look at your angle, look at how you're shooting. Just like welding, it's all about the angle. Mm-hmm. You know, So I can physically show them what they're doing wrong. I can show them how they're standing. I can show them how they're moving. I can show them, you know, I can basically, you know, teach them a lot faster. You know, what took me, you know, 5 years to become really good at, you know, and then you never really do get, you know, perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, over time you do get better, you know, but what I'm saying is to be able to go to all these different situations and all these different jobs and know how you're going to get through them, you know, before you even get there, or when you get show up to the job in the morning, you're not stressed. You're just like, oh, you know, most of the time, you know, it's like when I worked before working for other people, I'd show up. It's like, oh, okay, what are we doing today? I don't know what we're doing. Where are we going?
Yeah. It was kind of funny. I was talking with Chris on the phone the other night, trying to learn a little more about his business, and he kept mentioning a plug. And, you know, I remember looking at his machine because I met him at the Touch a Truck event they had there in Lakeside a while back. And looking at it, and like, I've seen a concrete pumper before. I've had a concrete pumper come in and do some projects with me. But you kept talking about a plug, and I was like, what kind of plugs are on that machine? You know, and I'm talking, Chris, what plug are you talking about, man? It can't be that hard to teach somebody.
Yeah, we're not plugging nothing in. We're not dealing with an outlet.
What is a plug?
A plug is, let's say you get a rock that falls into the pump, and the diameter of the hose that it goes through is 2 inches. And then the diameter of at the back of the pump where it comes out is 5 inches. So it has these reducers that reduces it down these different pipes that drops down to 2. Well, if you have the concrete comes and he brings, say, rocks, because they mix it up at the concrete plant. They have different, you know, they scoop it up in
different size aggregate.
With a tractor and they dump it, you know, through a screen or whatever. Well, maybe, you know, somehow rocks wind up. You know, a larger rock might wind up through a sieve or whatever. You know, it just.
You'll never just see it until you feel it, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, it winds up in the pump, and then it, you know, when it drops from 5 inches down to 2 inches, it might not make it. So those are the easy ones. That's for the pumper. The pumper gets to take care of those.
Yeah.
So he goes out and he unplugs it, you know, because it has a 3-inch rock and it just won't go through. So he goes out and takes care of that. And, you know, but then you get dry packs. You know, dry pack is where you put too much water in, a lot of times that will create a dry pack. So what will happen is the sand and the aggregate will separate, and it packs up. So you have all that.
Okay.
You know, it's pushing everything through that hose and everything with hydraulic pressure. So then, you know, as it's pushing through, it just, like I said, there might be a certain spot, say that the driver puts in too much water when he washes his shootout, you know, between trucks, and you don't mix it up well enough. You know, as the pumper,
so the water will get through real easy and not.
Well, it may come through, or it may start coming through, and then all of a sudden you may get a dry pack. So then there's the guy who's hanging onto the end of the hose. Well, with the older machines, you know, this hydraulic pressure will build up in the hose, and if you can imagine, it's like spraying water out of a fire hose. And let's say that fire hose were to plug up on the end. And that fire hose, instead of, you know, there only being 50 pounds of pressure, well, it's going 50, 75, 100, 110, 120, 130. But it's, you know, within split seconds. So the hose starts to straighten out. And the hose starts to stretch. Because the entire system stretches out because it's building up pressure. Well, if you're hanging onto the end of the hose, the only thing you can do is yell for the guy who has the pump, who has the remote. Stop! You're screaming. Mm-hmm. You're screaming, stop! Whatever. And with the old machines, they would thump up until, you know, they hit 2,500 PSI or 3,000 PSI or whatever that machine's capability was. Well, you would blow hoses, you know, because the hoses can only handle so much pressure. You know, it becomes less pressure the more hoses you have towards the end, you know, through resistance and everything. But, you know, you're, you know, basically hanging on for life because you can't throw the hose away, because if you throw it away, the second you go to throw it away, it could come unplugged. If it comes unplugged, it's like a water hose. You imagine how a water hose whips around. Well, this thing weighs probably the end of this hose probably weighs about 40 pounds. and it's got a big chunk of metal on the end of it. And if it comes back and it whacks you in the leg, or it whacks you in the head, or it whacks you wherever it hits you, you're going to be hurting.
You're going to feel it.
Yeah, you're going to feel it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's why, like I said, the old machines, that's the way those used to operate. Yeah. The newer machines, they at least have restrictions on the hydraulics that, you know, it will only reach, you know, if a certain pressure. You know, yeah, you may get kicked, but it's not, you know, just thumping all the way up to 3,500 PSI or 4,000 PSI or whatever it is. It's going.
It shuts down?
Well, it doesn't shut it down. It regulates it. So say that, you know, the material starts to dry up, it takes more pressure to push it through. Well, you know, if it spikes, say 200 PSI, it won't go past that 200 PSI.
Okay.
You know, so it's a lot. The newer machines are a lot safer in that way with the machine that I have.
Okay. Very good.
So, but
yeah, I mean that with the machines and obviously becoming a, you know, being a nozzleman, it sounds like there's two parts of that job. Like no matter what, it's got to be two people on the job.
I can do, if it's a smaller job, I can be the pump operator. It's not that big of a deal. But sure, when you start getting, say, you know, some people have a nice steep driveway and it's 300 mm-hmm. feet, you know, down to the bottom of the driveway, and that's where the pump's parked, mm-hmm. you know, and then you got a real steep driveway that you got to go up to the top of the hill, right. And then you've got to grab this hose, pick it up and start spraying. And well, you know, that might not be so bad if you're decently in shape, but let's say you have to get up into a man lift.
Yep.
Well, then you're dealing with the safety switches, you're dealing with this and that. So, and the machine doesn't move fast.
Yeah.
So, you know,
say you needed a new candidate. Where they were first day on the job, where would you have them start, or what would be the process like beforehand, like some trainings to just help them out with the job that would require two people?
Well, what I'm going to do, I know no one else does it. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna just have them come over, you know, before I at my house, just mm-hmm. no concrete, no nothing. I'm going to show you how to clamp, show you how to hook up the air hoses. Some guys struggle with those. I watch them, you know, been doing it for years, still cannot unhook these air hoses, or can't, you know, especially when they get a little bit of concrete in them, they don't understand, you know, it's like they get frustrated. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just some simple things, you know, and then just going over, you know, the hydraulics and going over, you know, things to look for, how to find a plug, you know, and what to watch out for when you're unplugging it, you know, because, like I said, I will repeat things probably 8, 9, 10 times, but I'm going to make sure that I drill it into your head so that when you go out on the job, you're going to be able to troubleshoot it, because you're going to know, you're going to be able to go, okay, you're going to put a little bit of pressure. You're going to walk, you know, oh, it stopped. Okay. Am I losing signal? Okay. Now I've already showed you that, how it loses signal. If it loses signal, how to tell if it's lost the signal or if it's plugged. You know, because sometimes you might go down the hill 300 feet. Oh, no, it just lost the signal. Well, time's ticking. You know, it's like the faster you can find it, you know, the better. So
this is the electronic controller of the pump?
Yeah,
the electronic. It works like Wi-Fi or whatever?
It has, I think it's almost like radar, not radar, but it's an older technology, but they were saying
walkie-talkie type.
Stuff. Yeah, they're saying the remote that I got is supposed to be the better one, because it's not screwed with by Wi-Fi, and
okay.
a lot of your newer technology will start screwing with it. But, you know, it's...
The kid up in the house tapped in and turned up the pressure.
yeah, whatever, yeah. So it's supposed to be a lot more basic so that it works. I'm not quite up to par when it comes to understanding it, but... But yeah, no, like I said, I just plan on just giving them kind of like a basic training. So when they go out on the job and I'm looking to make people look at me and go, oh, how long you been pumping? Oh, you, how long you been pumping? Oh, today is my first day. Really? Because yeah. I look forward, you know, I'm not going to tell anybody. Yeah. I just want people to go, oh, how long? Oh, you've been pumping. Who'd you pump for before? And then they're going, oh, this is my first. And they're going, wow, really? You know, just because, you know, if it takes you 45 minutes to learn how to clamp and unclamp a clamp, you know, and like I said.
Like you said, time is ticking.
Yeah. And it's just silly things. And like I said, I watch guys, you know, several years later, they're still trying to find a plug, and it's like it's plugged up. And I look at them, oh, it's plugged up in the back of this hose right here, the first hose that I'm hanging on to. It's right there at the back, you know, right where it goes into the pool, where it drops down. And, you know, other guys that I'd work with, you know, and different places, they didn't know I was a pumper, you know, so they just walk, they go back to the pump, and I'm just like, okay, well, sit here and be quiet, because yeah. I've already said it, and I said it out loud so everybody heard it, you know. And yeah. I'm watching them go back to the pump, and they're trying to unplug it at the pump, and then they start to try to pump, and then they realize, oh, wait a minute, it's over the hose I just told them.
So that's cool. That process of, you know, inviting them over, showing them the hoses, showing them the clamps.
Yeah.
Some of the more basic, like you said, doesn't involve concrete at all.
No, it's just giving you a heads up, you mm-hmm. know. And one of the things, too, is it's like, you know, I tell people, with my job, with what I do, you know, people ask me, oh, can you come over around 5 o'clock, you know, on Thursday night or whatever? I'm like, I don't know. I'm working. Well, you don't know what time you're getting off? No. You know, because in my head, I'm going, you know, I have two loads. It may be easy. You know, I may get off at, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. I may just be able to just get it done, yeah. You know, or let's say that the concrete doesn't show up. The concrete company kind of lags.
That never happens.
Oh, no, that never happens. No, things happen. Things happen, and the next thing you know, you spent an entire day there because you're, you know, because of other, you know, other situations that you didn't see. Maybe the job wasn't ready.
Yeah.
You know, because I've showed up.
We thought the inspector was going to be here at 7.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah. Oh, the inspector was going to be here at 7, and he has to be here to watch the certified nozzleman.
Yeah, or even
the you're not allowed to start until the inspector gets here. Well, what if I'm inspector? Yeah.
So well, you're doesn't with that. A building inspector have to come out on a lot of projects too and sign off for it?
They have to be a certified inspector to their special inspector. So they'll bring a small block of wood, or they'll bring a small test panel for me to shoot. So they'll core it.
Okay.
And that's one of the big things, but they're just testing the material there. They're not testing the nozzleman's experience or anything like that.
That makes sense. But, I mean, if you're pouring a slab and you have permits on that, the building inspector has to come out, and he's going to be looking at how deep the footings are, is the rebar tied properly, you know, that kind of stuff. Hopefully the people you're working on have that inspection signed off a couple of days.
Yeah, well, earlier. Sometimes you don't, and especially when you start getting busier, and you know it's like, okay, you say this job's ready. Yep, the job's ready. You're talking to the pool builder. You're talking to whoever the manager is. You know, that's hiring you. And it's like, oh yeah, it's ready. And then you show up, and you know, like I said, sometimes things take longer than expected. You
absolutely.
Know? And sometimes even the weather will dictate that too, you know.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. like, so I always tell people, you know, don't plan on anything the same day that you have shotcrete.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you know, and I mean, it kind of works out for you, you know, because you might get 12 hours and, oh, I sat around for 4.
Yeah.
That was easy money.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, that's where a trainee would start. And, on the other side, what is an ideal candidate that you look for? What is something that you're looking for in them before you even consider inviting them over to show them hoses, show them the clamps, show them the basics? What are a few characteristics that you'd be looking for in an employee right now?
I look for somebody who's in their early 20s or whatnot, you know, because you're in better shape. You may not be, but at the same time, you know, you're going to whip into shape a lot faster.
It is a physical job.
Yeah, it's a physical job, you know. And it's like me, I'm starting, you know, I'm 42. So, you know, it's like, you know, just the extra, just bending over and just doing other just things like that, you know. Like as a nozzleman, you don't do any of that. As a nozzleman, you stand straight up the entire time. So it's like they're two physically different jobs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, you're just able to run up and down the hill, and it's like it doesn't faze you. I remember, you know, when I was in my early 20s, I'd run up and down the hills and jump in the pool real quick. Oh, the truck's here, you know. And but you know, like I said, as a pumper, it's more what do you call that? Running and what do you call It's not like lifting weights. What do you call that? There's
cardio.
Cardio, exactly. That's cardio, the word. It's more cardio for the pumper, because sometimes, you know, you get a big plug in the reducer and it's like you have to take a hammer and try to get it out, or you have a big steel bar and you're just taking it, smashing it against a block of wood to try to knock it out of there.
Yeah.
And it's just, it might not come out that first time. Yeah. So you're just, you know, it's kind of like like swinging a maul to split wood. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you're busting up, you know, splitting logs. Okay. So it's more physical.
Do you get plugs on every job?
Not every job. Sometimes you get nice, smooth jobs. And like as the pumper, a lot of people like, you know, would prefer to be the pumper, because the pumper is a more easier, cushier job. But it does require you to hustle when, you know, when the time comes.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things. It has that easier.
Yeah.
Relax, you know, it's like, oh, relax, there's no concrete. But the second concrete hits it here, it's showtime. It's get it done as quick as you can, and you know, safely.
Do it right.
Yeah. Safely, but as quick as you can, because like I said, you know, time is money, and it literally starts ticking at 38 minutes later. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing for the finishers, too. They're standing around waiting for the concrete truck.
Yeah. You know? Well,
once it gets there, it's...
At the same time, the finishers are completely different. You know, the finishers are more so, you know, it's sometimes you may have to wait. They may have just stand around and wait on the materials, you know, because, you know, it's a different thing. You know, it's like, you know, you're shooting something that's vertical, and it's like they have to stand there and watch it, look at it, and it's like, yeah, it's not quite ready. Let's go eat my lunch. You know, because, you know, they might finish the face of it, but then they can't finish the top of it because, you know, it'll start to slouch and then get lower, and then they have to start slapping more material on the top. Well, then they start slapping more material on the top, and then they drop it falls. You have a mudslide.
Okay.
So there's different techniques with all these different jobs, you know.
Well, a lot of that is experience, eye-hand coordination.
Yeah. A lot of it is experience, you know. And like I said, with my company, with my videos, I'm only taking videos of everybody, including my finishers. You know, because you know, as other guys want to learn to finish, you know, I'm going to try to figure out ways that I can say, okay, step by step, here's what you need to do. Kind of, you know, like try to make it easier and faster for somebody to learn. You know. So, like I said, it's just going to make it that much, it's just going to make my guys that much better, because, you know, they have basic training, you know, they all have the basic knowledge, they all have the basic, so different guys, you know, because different guys work different, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes, you know, it's cool to work with people who do things different, you know, because you never know, you may learn something, whether they do good or bad.
Right.
Yeah. You can learn from someone who does bad.
Yep.
So somebody that likes to work outdoors, somebody who's physically fit, getting into I'm just going to call it concrete industry with you, because there's different aspects of concrete, even around outside of what you do, Chris.
And you're outside.
But we were talking earlier about, I mean, is that career going to be around for a few decades?
I mean, I think there's not going to be no way that you're going to be able to get a robot to do what will you do, because of the different situations. I mean, yeah, they're not going to have to pay workers' comp, but like I said, how cheap can you get a Tesla robot for, you know?
Yeah.
How cheap are those going to be? You know,
so you were talking earlier to me about, like, in the mining industry, or tunneling industry, where we're putting in water pipes. There's a tunnel being put in from below Hoover Dam.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom of the lake there, and eventually that tunnel's going to go all the way into LA someplace. Stuff, I'm not sure. You know, that's huge, multi-million-dollar pieces of equipment. Oh, yeah. There is robotics built into that.
Yes, jobs like that will probably stick with robotics, because, you know, they've got the tunneling equipment, and all the machines get, because one will come in and it has like outriggers that squeeze out against the walls, and it's got a drill that will drill forward, say, 10 feet. And then that machine will roll back on a set of tracks, and then they have another robot that rolls underneath it and comes out and does the shotcrete.
Yeah.
You know, and the ceiling might be 35, 40 feet up in the air, you know, because that's how large this drill is that's drilling through the ground.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. So, you know, they don't have to get guys in there with scaffolds. They don't have to worry about the hose plugging up. They can literally just unload it as hard as it can. And they have these special nozzles. They're about 3.5 feet long. So they can create a lot more pressure that a person isn't going to be able to hold on to. So they can literally launch it from the ground to the ceiling, but it just comes down to a feed rate and stuff like that, you know. So stuff like that is, you know, probably going to stay with robotics.
Yeah, as technology evolves, so there's going to be advancements in that.
But, you know, the fact is like, say it's like an older building and they need to go in and earthquake-proof it. You know, you're going to have to get a person inside there to go underneath, you know, because you're going to crawl underneath the building. You might be literally crawling across the ground and then dragging the hose across the ground. Okay, you're talking with the guy who's running the pump. You know, you're going, okay, give me a little bit, and then he gives you a little bit, and you're shooting a small section underneath a certain footing or whatever.
Okay.
Say it may be made out of brick, and it's starting to deteriorate. Well, before you've gotten there, you know, they've dug it out, and they've put steel in so you can shoot onto the steel, and they're reinforcing everything, you know. And you may be coming in just doing a repair. Well, you're going, you know, underneath the house. You know, you literally just do 35 seconds of shooting here. Okay, now we got to move over there. We got to shoot the next pillar, and you're doing another 35 seconds of shooting, and then you're taking a 15 minutes. Okay, now we got to go up the next floor. You know, so now
it's a whole new level of or track you can go.
Yeah, well, you're never going to get a robot to go into all these different situations. This is physical. It's physical work. You know, it's not just physical work, but it's like I said, it's got to have a brain.
So historical preservation is what you were just talking about.
Yeah, historical restoration.
I mean, as we rebuild our nation's infrastructure, bridges and things like that, I noticed we've done retrofittings around some of the huge pillars.
Yeah.
Put these big old steel things, and they come back and fill them.
Yeah. Well, like I said, there's going to be a lot of situations where, you know, depending on how large that machine is, you just aren't going to get it in there. You know, it's like if you're out – Temecula somewhere, they've scraped a property and they're getting ready to put a house in. One of the first things they do is ditches, brow ditches.
Okay.
So, you know, there might be 300-400 feet of hose that goes up the side of a mountain. And, you know, with that, you just pour the concrete pretty much out of it, unless it becomes, starts to have, walls that are too high. Then you put that nozzle on and then you start spraying it.
You're doing that for water control?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
So it's all erosion control. Like I said, they call them brow ditches. So they usually put those. Sometimes the buildings may already be there. Sometimes, you know, things will happen, and then they go, oh, we need brow ditches. So then they put them in after.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, there's going to be always going to be certain situations. They're not going to get a person in there to do it. They're not going to get a machine in there to do it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So it's going to be around for
And I think, like I said,
a lot of decades.
I think, like I said, as time goes on, if you know there were the right people selling, or if I got the right people into sales and just educate, just getting it out there so that more people knew about it, and just other contractors knowing about it, because like I said, you know, more people who know about it is going to give it more of a need. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. And that's absolutely where any industry, you can kind of, especially within the trades, you can go residential, you can go the full commercial. Mm-hmm. Where do you see the type of projects that you and your company are working on right now, and what's the future look like? Where do you guys want to be?
I don't know. Like I said, I you know, a lot of it's going to come down to the team that I can develop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I get guys that I, you know, can trust and they can work up in the company. I mean, someday they may be where I'm at. Someday I may be partnering with, you know, if somebody becomes absolutely irreplaceable, you know, I may, like I said, a lot of it's just going to come down to the people, you know, because a company is all about the people. And that's how I feel, you know, it's like, you know, amongst all the other politics and everything else that, you know, slow you down from being able to pay better. You know, it's like I said, you know, eventually you get to the point where it's like, well, okay, you know, how much of this do you want?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
so, you know, like I said, I don't want to be spraying concrete my rest of my life, you know, but when I get older, I would still like to, show up and hang out with the young guys. I mean, I still would like to go and go out on certain jobs or whatever, you know, just for the fun of going out. I still would like to grab the hose. I mean, it's, you know, it's fun, you know. Yeah. I knew one guy who's 75 years old and was still doing, he was still a nozzleman. And the only reason he stopped was because he was stubborn enough to go out to El Centro in the middle of the summer.
Got heat stroke.
He got heat stroke and they had to carry him out in a helicopter.
Wow.
You know, I don't go out to El Centro in the summer. Yeah.
I have family out there in El Centro, and I know as a kid you didn't care about the heat, but
no,
as an adult and working out there, that's a whole different animal.
That's one of those things, too, I want to develop. You know, I know a lot of other construction companies here in the United States, they don't do it. I was in Australia for a year, and I remember one guy talking, an employer talking to me. He goes, yeah, he says, if it reaches I forget what it was, so many degrees Celsius, you know, we go home. We're paid for the day. It's like a rainy day. You go home, you're paid. Yeah. You're not going out in that kind of heat. Or if we can schedule the job earlier in the day or, you know, at night, you do that, you know. But, you know, it comes to a certain point when you're going, you know, physical labor, I don't care how safe you try to be when, you know, the temperature is above your body temperature.
Yeah, you can't fight Mother Nature after a certain point.
No, you can't. You're not in a bubble. You're not in a special suit, you know.
Yeah, a lot of roofers start 2 in the morning and finish 10.
Yeah, you got to be out of there about, like you said, by 10. And sometimes by 10, it's starting to heat up pretty good.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, and because I know you mentioned you had done projects over there on like La Jolla for foundation. You know, you're adding to the foundation that it already has. And what other jobs that can someone imagine working on the first day?
On the first day, I mean, honestly, one of the things about what I do is, you know, I may get like when I'm pre-siting jobs or even when I'm actually going out and doing the jobs, it's like, you don't know where you're going to be each day. One day you might be in Point Loma on a Navy base. The next day you might be in Hamul somewhere, or you might go to Oceanside. We might go work on Oceanside Pier. Oh, they've got an emergency situation. They need something done out, because sometimes things just pop up.
Yeah,
you know, and you go, oh, you know, it's like about a month ago when all this rain was happening, I got a call literally the day, you know, one day, and they said, hey, can you be here later on this afternoon? We've got to shoot this channel. And they call it riprap. And what riprap is it's where they put in a bunch of big, large boulders or just large rocks, and then you shoot concrete around it. And it's usually like in a drainage ditch or whatnot. But this was in Lemon Grove area or Encanto. And it was one of these emergency situations. Like, we need somebody today. Can you be here? We want to order concrete. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm not busy today. So, you know, just things like that, you know, might pop up, you know, or like one of the things people don't know about, you know, is like, I really love going out. It's called the Flume. It's out in Hamul area. There's all these different lakes. There's Lake Barrett, and there's you know, all these different lakes are all connected.
Yeah, Loveland's out there.
Well, there's aqueducts. There's aqueducts. And then these aqueducts, what's really amazing to me is these aqueducts were built in the late 1800s. And you as an individual, most people don't know about them. And, you know, you go out there and you're just looking at these aqueducts that were built by the Chinese back in, the late 1800s. And my wife, you know, because I was just talking to my wife about it and stuff, and I've went out there several times, and we've fixed pieces of this aqueduct. Well, there's some of it. It's just like, how do you even get equipment into it? Because, you know, it was built, you know, at a time when, you know, you look at everything and you just kind of have an appreciation of what it is. You're going, wow, this is really cool. And nobody knows about it. This is in, you know, East County, San Diego, and nobody knows about it. And it's like, this is really cool. Cause you just look at it and you go, wow, they had how many people worked on this project? And this was in a time when everything was wagon and horse, you know, so they had to bring in I would think that they would have had to bring in the concrete powder to at least mix up these channels. And these, like I said, these channels are over 100 and what 130 years old or whatever, like I said, late 1800s. Mm-hmm. But you're just looking, it's going between valleys, and they even dug tunnels through some of the mountains. And you're just looking at that, you know, and you know, like I said, with my job, sometimes you get to see some really interesting things, you know. It's, yeah. You never know. You know who's going to call you. Yeah. Oh, we got this bizarre situation, you know. You think you could do shotcrete here or you know, like I said, in that situation I go out there and you just look at that and you're going, "Jesus, how many men did it take to do this job?" Because, you know, you got to figure you had the guys working the chain gang that mixing up the concrete, digging the hole. You had to have guys digging a hole. Mm-hmm. You had to have guys bringing in, I'm sure probably had to bring in powder unless they could create the powder from whatever was there. You know, obviously there's a lot of DG and they could probably quarry most of the materials that they needed to build it there. But then, you know, it's like on top of it, you're going, wow, they would have had to bring supplies for these people too, because these people have to eat. Mm-hmm. You would have had guys going food, back water. And forth, back and forth for food and water.
Yeah, one of those modern marvels that you just never imagined. That,
yeah, like, you look at it, you're going,
you stumble upon it, you're like, this
wow,
is
why is this? Why does no one know about this? But like I said, sometimes you just wind up in a situation like where you're at a certain job and you just go, man, this is really cool. Or you wind up, you're literally down on the beach in La Jolla.
Yeah.
You know, or you're literally on the beach.
Yeah.
Oh, we're pumping from the street. Okay. Oh, we want to put in some fake rocks. Mm-hmm. We don't want it to look so ugly because we don't want the neighbors to complain that there's ugly concrete on the side of this hill. So we got rock finishers here. So rock finishers will shape the concrete to make it look like rocks. Mm-hmm. And it might even be colored. You know?
Okay.
So, cool. You know, some, and like I said, sometimes you're just like,
and who knows, it might be a full circle 100 years later and they're going to look at your job that you did and they're going to be like, wow, how did they do that on the beach?
Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, my job's cool, but it's absolutely. I just look at the manpower and that one particular job. Like I said, I think my wife told me there was like 50 something miles of it.
Wow.
Because she looked it up online. And it's called the flume.
Okay.
Yeah, have to remember that.
Yeah, the flume. But, there's a lot of...
Can we raft that, like in a kayak or something?
No, it's only... when they open the gates at, like, Barrett, or they open gates between certain things, it only flows at certain times. Mm. you know, but...
Finding out the time.
Yeah. But it's just... like I said, it was just interesting looking at it and going... You know, because like I said, you start wrapping your mind around that. And, geez.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's got to be places like that all over.
Oh, yeah. You know? No. I like I said, it all the time. You know, it's like I got to for the other company that I worked for, you know, it's a good company and everything. But they, you know, we were earthquaking the inside of, or not, we were basically shooting the inside of, the Museum of Man, and going up 8-9 floors.
Wow.
And it was an awesome job, you know, and it was cool even working for you know, the other company. You know, it was just like, wow, we're going working on the historical building, like the historical building down in Balboa Park. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, you know, it was not a one day job. It was like, oh, we're going to go shoot, we got to do maybe this floor, you know, like the first floor, we could do a couple floors, you know. But it was just like, oh, we're going to go back to the Museum of Man, and they already had it, you know, all the pipe and plumbing and everything set up, so we could just show up and just hook up and just do our thing. But it was just a really cool project, you know, because I was just going, you know, it wasn't necessarily the work itself; it's just where you are and what you're doing, you know. And it's like you're going, wow.
Yeah, those are all definitely historical buildings down at Balboa Park.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you know, like I said, you never know where you're going to wind up. You know, and most of the time, you know, what we do or my jobs, they're a day, you know, and like I said, that job there was, you know, several days, but it was at the same time, it was like, oh, okay, it's every Tuesday or every other day. So you're still going other places. It's like I said, you show up in the morning, like, oh, where are we going today? You know, it's always an adventure. And that's one of the biggest perks, I think, with what I do. You know, I see a lot of guys, you know, that are in working construction or whatever, they're framers or roofers or whatever, you know, but I don't think they quite go every day is not a different job. You know, they're on that site for several months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on what you're doing.
Yeah. Depending on what you're doing. So, you know, like I said.
Yeah. This is perfect. This is exactly what we want to be able to shout out there is like it, on the Trades Podcast is really shine the light on a, like you said, you even said it yourself, like where it is a niche, you know,
it's a field. What I do is a very niche.
Yeah.
Very small. Yes. Yeah, niche.
And we get a chance to, you know, get a, I say a deep dive, but I swear there's way more under the surface,
dude, yeah,
that we can probably dive into. And it's, you know, just to hear the stories, the jobs that you're on, the equipment that you use, your goals, for you and what you want to do for, anybody that's looking to get into it, want to learn about it. I mean, if anybody's looking to apply or even be in this field and you call Chris, you're working with Chris, working with Chris. He's there with all 18 years of experience, right?
Yeah, it's probably closer to 19 now.
19, yeah. All 18 years of experience right there, 19, you know. Yeah. So he's there to help you out. And that's one thing that I think that's a key thing why we're, like, again, super happy to have you on the show. Any last words out there for young adults that you want to inspire to either be a part of the trades or even come work for you?
Yeah. Like I said, I think – doing what I do, it would always be a good backup, you know, to do, you know, if other things don't work out in your life, you know, there's room for marketing, there's room for sales, there's room, you know, I'm going to need those kind of guys too. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, I'm not just going to be able to have to hire guys who are into marketing, you know, I'm going to need them to actually go out and do the work at first. So, you know, I think it's going to give them a better edge to be able to sell what I do because it's such a niche.
Yep.
So, you know, like I said, they have to have that understanding. And eventually, I would be more than happy to move somebody up. If they're better at something else, I would be more than happy to move them up, mm-hmm. you know. But, like I said, being able to help me get started and moving forward, that's kind of.
Yeah, sounds like there's some great opportunity to work one-on-one and learn a new field and grow with you, Chris. So, if anybody wants to take you up on that offer, how do they get a hold of you?
Give me a phone call. My website is bigfootshotcrete.com.
Awesome.
Most of the time, I like phone calls the best.
Mm-hmm. So what's the phone number?
619-715-9268.
All right.
Sweet. Right there. And we'll put all that information out there on all the platforms for anybody that's listening. Again, reach out to him directly. He's the one you're working with. He's the one that you want to learn a lot of this in the industry. So reach out to him. Bigfootshotcrete.com.
Yep.
Thank you again.